This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan All. It's Politics Day. Our regular contributors, Iowa State University political science professor Stephen Schmidt and New Hampshire-based political analyst Arnie Arneson will be our guests. They'll talk about a number of issues that have bubbled up this week, and we'll also take your phone calls and emails. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. Politics Day with Stephen Schmidt and Arnie Arneson is coming up next after this check of news from National Public Radio and Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan All. It's Wednesday, our politics day. Stephen Schmidt from Iowa State University is with us in our studio in Ames. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
And joining us on the line from New Hampshire is New Hampshire-based political analyst Arnie Arneson. Arnie, good morning.
Good morning on this wet, rainy day. Is it wet and rainy in Iowa?
Oh, no, sunny, warm.
Oh, okay.
The crocuses are coming up today.
Our creeks are not flooding. It's a happy place to be.
It's a beautiful day in Iowa, but isn't it always? So, Stephen, a quote from Gore Vidal caught your fancy this week. Why don't you share that with us?
Thank you. Gore Vidal, most of our listeners know who Gore Vidal is, so he's a famous writer and sort of curmudgeon. As societies grow decadent, the language grows decadent too. Words are used to disguise, not to illuminate action. You liberate a city by destroying it. Words are to confuse so that at election time, people will solemnly vote against their own interests. I thought that was really good, especially because we've seen so much really inappropriate language surrounding especially healthcare reform and other legislative things, and so much hyperbole, misdefinition of things, that it's very confusing, and there may be a purpose to it. My students in my American government class are really confused. I mean, they ask me, they say, you know, is Obama really a communist? Is he really a socialist? You know, what does this all mean? Is this the end of the United States? Are we going to become a totalitarian country now, and so on? And it is, you know, words have meaning, language has meaning, and I think we have wandered off into a semantic wilderness that really doesn't help people make good decisions.
Can I? It's interesting, Stephen, because you sent me that quote this morning.
Yeah.
And as you were sending me that quote, another friend of mine was sending me a quote saying, you should use this quote today on Iowa Public Radio. Don't you love it? You're now getting everybody all juiced up. And here's the quote. Fanaticism consists in redoubling your effort when you have forgotten your aim.
Yep.
George Santayana. It's almost a parallel to the quote that you came up with this morning. And let me share something with you, Jonathan. I wrote a letter to the editor yesterday in the Concord Monitor, and I sent the letter in last night. The letter is in today's Monitor. At my time, it's about 10 minutes after 11. By 10 minutes after 11, there are already 32 responses to my letter. I've gotten close to two dozen emails. The responses are over the top. I mean, they're scary. And I think we have to step back, Stefan, and ask ourselves, what has technology wrought? And the reason I say that is that we used to send a letter. We used to make a phone call. We could send a telegraph, but we didn't get instant gratification. We didn't get to heat each other up. We didn't get to put out misinformation and watch it clone before our eyes.
Yeah.
And what is happening now is that so much of this overreaction is the intensity that is brought about by the technology. And it's unbelievably frightening. And I think we have not figured out how to control our own response. I think we've also not figured out how to be our own gatekeepers. We don't know what's real and what's Memorex. And again, I got a factcheck.org this morning. And you told us we can't talk about healthcare, but I will talk about the IRS. Because one of the accusations
talk about health care.
But listen to this, Jonathan. One of the accusations, Jonathan, that has come out as a result of the passage of health care reform is that we are now going to see 16,500 new IRS agents packing heat. Now, if you go to factcheck.org, it's made up of a whole cloth. It's not true. But when you've got Ron Paul saying it, you see it on the internet, it's coming across everywhere. So if you hate health care reform, what do you hate as much? You hate the tax man. So now they've made health care reform the tax man packing a Glock.
There must be inflation on that, Arnie, because I read that it was 12,000.
Okay, well, see, this is what happened in 48 hours. I mean, the number, it's going to be 500,000 by the time the end of the week shows up. But I think we have to start talking to ourselves about technology and its downside, because this is clearly a downside that we haven't been taught to adjust to.
Let me pose the question to you, Arnie. If someone feels really passionate about an issue, and so much so that they feel that the ends justifies the means, if they really do philosophically believe that the Health Care Act that was signed into law is really an affront to the Constitution, really does violate their sensibilities, and they really believe that passionately, and they believe that the end justifies the means, isn't the freedom of speech, the freedoms to be as verbose, to exaggerate as much as you want, isn't that a critical part of democracy to be able to do that? And how do we tell people that they ought not to be as passionate about something?
So here's the question, I guess, that you're asking me, and that is your intensity and your anger and your frustration and your disgust with a piece of legislation a license to lie? Is it a license to lie? Is it a license to distort? Is it a license to threaten? Ask members of Congress. So you tell me, what in a democracy allows you to use any tactic, because you disagree? You see, I don't think that's what democracy is. And I think we have to have a collective conversation about what are the limits in a democratic society when people are upset about something, because I think we have forgotten how to have a rational conversation and what are the lines of demarcation between a conversation and basically destruction. And I think that they both begin with D, democracy and destruction. But one creates a stable society, the other one creates turmoil.
Well, we've always had this problem. In a sense, I think this discussion is very relevant, because we had something called yellow journalism at one time. And yellow journalism was nothing but a bunch of very powerful moguls, media moguls, making up stories and in some cases really actually lying in order to drive circulation. One of those stories was the story about the sinking of the Maine in Havana Harbor, which actually led to the Spanish-American War, largely. And it wasn't true. We now think that the munitions magazine on the boat caught on fire. Probably somebody was smoking a nice Cohiba, you know, nice expensive Cuban cigar. But Randolph Hearst and the newspaper industry said, "Whoa, you know, it looks like Spain blew up our ship," and then nationalism erupted all over the country, and we marched in. To retaliate. So,
and really, you know, that the way that you could look at that is that the blame for Maine fell mainly onto Spain. Hopefully, my high school history teacher is listening.
That was the way to remember.
Yeah, Dennis Tank, Carl Sandburg High School, junior year. U.S. government class. That's how he got us to remember.
I'll never forget.
We're clipping this tape and sending it to him. I tell you right now, we're doing it.
So, Mr. Tank, if you're listening, thank you. I was paying attention that day.
And you know, you're right too. That I tell my students this all the time, because they always want to shut up people here on campus who are saying things that they don't like. And I'm always saying, we don't need the First Amendment and the part that says freedom of speech to protect people who are saying things that everybody agrees about. We need the First Amendment so that people can say things or have symbolic speech that is really offensive. And in a democracy, in a country like this, if we don't want to hear it, we walk away from it. We stick our finger in our ears. We don't look at the swastikas on the armbands of the Nazis marching in Skokie, Illinois, which is a community that had a lot of survivors of the Holocaust, where the Nazis were given a permit to march. And my students think it's abhorrent. They said they should have never let them do that. They should have not given them the permit. And yet our history is, as Jonathan pointed out, a history where we As long as you don't step over the line where my nose begins and your fist ends, you can throw your fist in the air, but you can't punch me in the nose because then it's assault. And I think the same is true now that we have to say, you know, this is all disruptive. It's all lies. It's all distortions. And in some cases, people are misinterpreting. They're not understanding right. But if anybody gets injured or killed, or if there, God forbid, are assassination attempts, then that is not protected by the First Amendment, and we step in.
But in light of what's going on with the Internet and some of the inflammatory language that's coming out of leadership, my question is, what is the new definition of yelling fire in a crowded theater? What is the new definition? Because it isn't just that anymore. We've got to start looking at what that means. And we're living in very, very frightening times.
Yep.
And again, that's where you take a look at all the issues that make people afraid, whether it's health care, whether it's a lack of jobs, whether it's competition, whether it's energy, all these things compound, and then you don't have and there's more misinformation out there than there is real information. And last but not least, supposedly the airwaves are the public airwaves, but they are not. The public does not have access to their own airwaves. They've sold to the highest bidder. The largest conglomerate buys it. And it isn't about serving the public good. It's about serving the profit margin. And the profit margin doesn't necessarily benefit a country or a conversation.
You know, you don't have to listen to Fox. You can listen to public radio, and then you won't ever hear any of those things. You know, I have friends who tell me I never watch TV. I never read the newspaper because it is all so disturbing. It makes me so mad. I know I'm going to die young of a heart attack. I just don't want to know. And so people are basically, a lot of people, shutting themselves out. You see what's happening to CNN? CNN's ratings are dropping because they're all just hysterical yelling and screaming stuff. Foxes are up, but, you know, they're not very strong ratings. People are walking away from all this, and they are becoming narrowcast. We used to have broadcasters. Now the Internet is a narrowcast because basically you can find the 20 different websites and YouTube sites that you like and enjoy, and then you can watch those, and you can block out all contradictory information. And that is not good, because the common space where we all share the same information has shrunk, or maybe it's disappearing even. And we have to figure out how to reinvent something there, because
that's my point, Jonathan. Yeah. Is that we have not as teachers and as faculty members, we don't even understand the technology that is evolving or devolving around us. So the problem is, where do you go for guidance when you realize that it's, you know, I was just looking at a bill. Was it the bill in Iowa? I think it was, Stefan. You had written about Joe Sixpack, or there was a comment about Joe Sixpack and all the legislation that's passed. Well, I'll be quiet.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have to get to that in just a minute.
Joe Sixpack in a minute.
We'll also take your phone calls and emails, 866-780-9100, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a minute with Stefan Schmidt and Arnie Arneson on Politics Day here on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Stefan Schmidt, Arnie Arneson are our guests on this Politics Day. We'll have your phone calls and emails in just a moment. But first, Joe Sixpack.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
This is good. Cedar Rapids Gazette. See, I read. I'm a good doobie. And one of the comments was that they were talking about increasing certain fines and violations for drivers. And they decided that they're going to ban cell phones and texting for those under the age of 18. And the state senator is waxing poetic about how good that is. And I'm thinking, actually, that's not good. Probably under the age of 18, they can probably use their cell phone and text better than me.
Yeah.
Because they're more agile. They're able to do that. They've been doing it since they're probably in utero. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, this is to show how out of touch we are. As if someone over the age of 18 is better at it. As if they know better, as if they could do it faster, as if they know if they've developed the skill of multitexting and multitasking. I mean, I'm looking at this going, either you ban it for everybody, but to make the decision about under the age of 18 really doesn't get it, because we really don't understand what they know, which is a heck of a lot more than what we know as adults.
The other thing is, this is a little article that my friend Charlotte Eby did, and it's about sort of the quirky laws that were thrown around this year in Iowa, and people should go read it because she did a nice job. Arnie, we are now going to make it much easier for people to get permits and carry concealed firearms. And at the same time, we're going to make it much easier and faster for bars to get the higher alcohol content beer.
That's great, but don't you dare
those two things don't make any sense to me either. You know, you're going to have much more high-content alcohol beer served to people who are over the age and therefore can text message while fiddling with their concealed weapon, you know?
Exactly. And so I just want people to play this out. But again, it shows the disconnect because it's the adults that are passing these laws. And, of course, they're looking at the children going, oh, my God, you can't do this. And I'm looking at them going, do you know what you're doing? You know, so that's part of the problem is we're at a point right now as a society where adults used to teach the children, and we're living in such a quick technological sort of chasm where our younger people know more about the technology but less about its impact on life.
We have a number of phone calls. Let's go to some old technology. We got some phone calls here. Let's start with Peg in Ames. Peg, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to bring up something you've already obviously spoken about, but I listened to On Point yesterday, and they didn't really concentrate on it, and that was the fear factor in the American public. That mm-hmm. was, fear of food. We can't eat hamburgers safely anymore. We can't eat peanut butter safely anymore. We can't buy toys anymore for our children because they're coated with lead paint. We're afraid of losing our jobs. We're afraid of losing our health insurance. And I think afraid of terrorism. Forgot that one.
That's the big one, yeah.
Yeah, the big one. And that one, and I think that fear over the last 10 or 15 years has really been exploited. Starting with, but added to 9/11, every time the Bush administration got into a tight spot, they would up the terrorism.
Well, Peg, let me ask you, though, if someone legitimately believes, and whether they're accurate or not is probably beside the point, but if they legitimately believe that something going on is cause for fear, and they feel an obligation to communicate that fear to other people.
Oh, I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think an awareness of it is true. But right now, we're getting to the use of these metaphors, as in Sarah Palin's comment about "don't retreat, reload," and Rush Limbaugh's comment about something about wiping out the bastards. Hey. You know, this isn't discussion. This is warfare. And I.
But again, I'm not trying to defend it necessarily, but I'm just to the discussion on the point. If you in your heart of hearts realistically believe that something that's happening or not happening literally is the first step to the end of society as we know it, and you feel a compulsion to sound the clarion call as loud as you can, who are the rest of us to say that you don't have the right to do that or that you ought not to
do
that?
I'm not saying that they don't have the right to do it, but I will quote you this. Wasn't it FDR who said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself"? And that was the end of civilization as we know it, or it was at the beginning of the Second World War, and we were looking down the barrel of the end of civilization as we knew it. And what he said was, "Don't scare yourself silly, or we won't get anywhere with it."
Peg, thank you very much for your call. That's a really good call. Thanks, Peg. Steph and Arnie.
It's an interesting point, and I would remind you that we have had things that come disturbingly close to this before. Thomas Jefferson, in his letter to William Stephen Smith in 1789 or 87, I guess it was, said this: "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure." Well, if Rush Limbaugh says that on the air, man, we're going to go nuts, aren't we, right now? But Thomas Jefferson wrote that in a letter, you know, that from time to time, there may come circumstances when either the tyrants or the patriots are going to have to spill some blood. And maybe he was referring to warfare. Maybe he was referring to politics. You know, the context is a little bit fuzzy, and I've read a little bit about it. But, you know, that's just it. Now, if you go as far as the Rwandan radio station goes, which I've mentioned before, called Radio Mille Collines, which means the Thousand Hills radio station, they use that radio station to specifically direct people to villages and churches and other places to slaughter Tutsis or Hutus, I can't remember. But Radio Mille Collines as a radio station was deliberately used to monitor and to direct the genocide in Rwanda. Now, that's not an appropriate use of radio.
I'm listening to this, and part of the problem with the fear, too, I think, is that, you know how we complain about nothing is made here? So when you hear about a product, a toy for a child coming with lead content, it's made in China. And there's a sense of vulnerability that you buy the product, but you have no idea about who's making it, what's happening. It's in a world across an ocean. I mean, think about all the things that we can't prove or trust because it's outside our realm of comprehension or our geographic reach. And I think that's also part of what's happening with this sort of, you know, smaller planet or globalization, is that it also has led to the increased fear. It really has.
But Arnie, 50 years ago, if you went to the neighborhood butcher and they had sausages hanging in the window, did you really know what was in that sausage, even though it was made close to home? I'm kind of, you know...
I hear what you're saying, but there's a difference. Because again, you did know the butcher. Because it wasn't wrapped in plastic, put on a shelf with a guy you never saw and no one you could respond to. I think all these things just sort of add to the problem. It doesn't mean that it's correct. It doesn't mean that it didn't happen in the past. I'm just telling you right now, it's fear on steroids.
Well,
that's what we're experiencing.
In my case, I take a lot of generic medication. And they just had this FDA discovered that
right.
This one company from India, which actually has a manufacturing facility in the U.S., was completely irresponsible in how they manufactured their medication. Now, when it comes to pharmaceuticals, we have no idea what's in them, where they come from, what the ingredients are. They had this one medication made in China out of pig guts. I don't know if you remember that story. They went to see where those pig guts were processed to then be manufactured into this medication, and they almost fell off their, you know, Jeep, rickshaw, whatever they were going there in, because it was little, tiny, absolutely filthy hog farms in little villages in China that were covered with feces and stuff. They said, we wouldn't allow dog food to be made out of this, much less pharmaceuticals. And so we are in a period, you know, we don't know why the stupid Toyotas won't stop. Now we're getting NASA involved, the U.S. Space Agency. And, of course, the conservatives are going nuts about this. You know, we're helping the Japanese. We're killing off the space program to help the Japanese figure out why the stupid brakes on Toyotas don't work. Everybody's afraid of everything, and it's part of the culture we live in, technology society. Our computers are crashing. Our identities are being stolen. It is a very stressful time to be living. There's no doubt about it. Very stressful.
We'll have more on this topic. We'll try to get some more phone calls and your emails as well after we take a break for the Environment Report here on Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Stephen Schmidt and Arnie Arneson will be back in just a moment. I'm Jonathan Aull. It's 10:30. This is Talk of Iowa.
High fructose corn syrup. This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. We know eating too much sweet stuff can help us put on the pounds. Well, Sean Ali reports a new study suggests the kind of sweet stuff matters a lot.
Well, food companies mostly sweeten things with table sugar. It's called sucrose. But they also use high fructose corn syrup. And I talked to a professor at Princeton University about this. His name is Bart Hubble. A while back, his research team fed rats regular rat food, but they let them drink watered-down sucrose to see if they would put on fat. And they didn't put on that much fat. But recently, he fed rats the same kind of rat food, but he let them drink a solution of high fructose corn syrup.
The ones with the high fructose corn syrup became significantly fatter.
Now, corn sweetener companies dismiss this study. They say it involves rats, not people. Hubble says rat studies do point out where we should be doing human studies later, so they're pretty worthwhile.
So we want to find out if the kind of sugar matters as the food producers are putting sugar in more and more things.
More research on corn syrup is in the pipeline, and that includes work on animals and people.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Take care, Lester.
This is the Environment Report. Larry Schweiger is president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation and author of the book Last Chance: Preserving Life on Earth, and he joins us now. You write in your book, like it or not, global warming is the defining issue of the 21st century, but you also note there's a fair amount of what you call cynical obfuscation of the science on global warming. If the overwhelming amount of science supports the fact that climate change is happening and burning fossil fuels is contributing to that change, why is skepticism among the American public growing?
Well, I think if you need to look at how much money is being spent by the fossil fuel industry, the oil and coal industry, to confuse the American public on this issue. And they have done a masterful job, as we've seen, in creating doubt, sending signals of confusion.
Most scientists tell me the effects of global warming are happening faster than first predicted. But those effects are often lost on the general public. Your group, the National Wildlife Federation, represents hunters, fishers, birdwatchers, people who are out in nature. Are they noticing changes?
They are, and they are helping us to communicate to Congress and helping us to get the word out about what's taking place. Unfortunately, a lot of Americans today spend 7 hours or more in front of a computer screen or a TV screen or in some other way disconnected from nature. The average child, for example, spends some 7 minutes a day in nature. So we as a society are losing connection with nature. But those who are in nature each and every day are seeing that the changes take place because they've watched it over their lifetime.
Your book not only makes the case that the world of nature as we know it is worth saving, but you note some things that everyday folks can do. You can protect natural areas near you. Talk back to news media, push the politicians, get your hands dirty, literally, by organic gardening at home. But I get the impression most of us are looking to someone else to solve this global problem. I mean, after all, the Earth is just too darn big for any one of us to make much of a difference.
Really, what we need to do as Americans, we need to give voice to these problems and demand that we see action. I think we need to step up and tell our lawmakers what we believe, what we want to see done.
Larry Schweiger is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation and the author of the book Last Chance, Preserving Life on Earth. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
Support comes from the Park Foundation, the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.
This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan Aull, Stephen Schmidt, political science professor at Iowa State University, and New Hampshire-based political analyst Arnie Arneson are our guests on this Wednesday Politics Day. We're also taking your phone calls and emails. You can reach us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. 866-780-9100 is our phone call, your phone number for you to call. Let's start with Jay from West Point. Jay, you're on the program.
Yeah. This topic about the stridency of both sides or something, they're trying to equate both sides, and let's just go back to recent history of our lifetime. I can't remember any party side, like, you know, Gephardt was Speaker of the House or what was some of the other ones for the Republicans. They never let people on a Capitol start screaming stuff like, we're going to beat them to a pulp, we're going to get them on the run. This is Steve King, by the way. An uprising, he said it on a local station around here, and I hope it's not violent. And then also saying baby killer on the floor, that kind of justifies the leadership, even Boehner himself, Armageddon. So if it's that red light crisis that the leaders are letting get down, we're not talking about some crazy in a tea party or something. I mean, Fox News has been going, I can't stand them, but I do monitor them. And the last three nights, O'Reilly, it just backfilled to that we're not, it's all the same. The left had Kill Bush posters, and that's a joke. the stuff that's coming from their leadership is leading to this, like, crisis in these people's minds, and paramilitary is starting to... I told people a year ago...
Jay, do you think that level of rhetoric is significantly different than what Democratic leaders were saying about President Bush, especially with the issue of the Iraq War?
I never remember a Democratic leader like Pelosi or Gephardt ever saying, we're going to beat them to a pulp, we're going to get them on the run, they're killers, they're... This is the leadership. We're not talking about... There was a crackpot Georgia congressperson, and she did something like, I don't know, she didn't say kill
Cynthia
Bush
McKinney.
Or something.
Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah, and they didn't... They ran somebody against her. They got rid of her.
Jay, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. Arnie and Steph, can you react to that? Do you... To Jay's call there?
Well, I think that both parties obviously use... exaggeration, emotion. I mean, we know what works. The question is that, again, I go back to, is it a license to lie? Is it a license to inflame? Is it a license to encourage someone to bring up a weapon? I have in front of me a copy of Sarah Palin's Facebook page about the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Now, this is a tournament, okay? Basketball. I'm reading this, and just let me read you a couple sentences. To the teams that desire making it this far next year, gear up. In the battle, set your sights on next season's targets. From the shot across the bow, the first second's tip-off, your leaders will be in the enemy's crosshairs. So you must execute strong defensive tactics. You won't win only playing defense, so go on the offense. The crossfire is intense. Penetrate the enemy territory by bombing through the press. Use your strong weapons. Pull out your big guns. Drive to the hole. Shoot with accuracy. I'm reading this going, wait a second. We're talking basketball here? I'm going, and then her last line is, no matter how tough it gets, never retreat. Instead, reload. Reload a basketball? I mean, come on, Jonathan, wake up and smell the coffee.
But sports are war, Arnie. Where have you been?
In
Colombia, they have to put a barbed wire fence around the soccer field and put armed military police on the inside, because in Colombia they have actually killed a goalie who lost a game for Deportivo Cali, I think, or one of the big teams. Number two, they have actually gone to the house and killed a referee because he did a bad call on a game.
But
people's
that?
Passion go very high. Have you ever seen hockey coaches? They showed a hockey coach the other day who so totally lost it that he took his one of the hockey sticks and he smashed it and smashed it and broke it. And then he was still mad and he went over and yanked one out of the other player's hand and then started smashing it. The players were all, you know, they were all suited up, but they were all kind of cringing over to the corner saying, you know, is he going to lose it and turn on us? There's a lot of passion out there. Nobody so far, thank God, this has all been rhetoric. It's all hyperbole. It's all narrow casting to people. We're all excited about it. If this spills over and we begin to see actual violence, then I think the time has come to call home the words, and the members of Congress are going to be the first ones who are going to be very reluctant to continue this down this line. You know,
let me pitch the question this way. If there is 20-30% of the population that is on the extreme left on some issue and 20-30% that's on the extreme right on some issue, and these are the people that go into the echo chambers, they only consume opinions that they already agree with on either side, and they're not going to change each other's minds, obviously. Mm-hmm. Are they having any impact on the 40-60% in the middle? And is there any place for the 40-60% in the middle to get some kind of reasonable, objective information so that they can make up their own mind without entering the extreme echo chambers on either side?
Let me share something with you. I was listening to the Diane Rehm show out of Washington this morning, and they were talking about the militia. And there was a young woman that was being interviewed, and she has done a documentary about them. But here was the part of the story that scared me. And she said she went to one militia event somewhere, I don't know where it was, maybe on the Mexican border. She said there was more folks from the press than there were people participating in the militia. So it turns out that what is getting the attention, all the noise and all the excitement, may not really represent numbers or a significant portion of the population, but you could never tell that, Jonathan, based upon the coverage they get.
That's not new, Arnie, though. That's been happening for 50 years.
Oh, I understand that. I understand that. But understand that the kind of access, again, I go back to technology, Jonathan. That's part of our problem. And I think at some point in time, people have to step back, whether it's people in the middle or whatever. And I'm listening to your environment report. I'm a good little doobie. I listen. And and there's some powerful stuff there, because Michael Pollan just wrote a book called Food Rules. And what I love about this is that instead of getting people frightened, instead of playing to that anxiety, he says there are simple things you can do to run your life that won't, you know, discredit Walmart or say bad things about the people. But, for example, one of his food rules, which is so wonderful because it's so easy to understand and doesn't frighten you, it says avoid food products containing ingredients that a third grader cannot pronounce. Now, I don't know about you, but I love that rule. I think that's a rule that I could live by. That means I understand, you know, the word sugar, but I may not understand hydroxychloroquine, blah, 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 whatever it is. And at some point, we need to start finding people like the Michaels of this world who can talk not on fear, but talk in a language and give people an understanding of how to live their life that's both rational and real.
But
those leaders don't exist.
Even in something that sounds as simple as what you're talking about, Arnie, though, if you take out a preservative that has a big, long name, now the food goes bad faster,
right.
And now it costs more.
That's right.
And are we is this country prepared to pay twice
as much for food that
only has real natural ingredients?
I love him. He anticipated you. He said, if it came from listen to this, if it came from a plant, eat it. If it was made in a plant, don't. So there you go, honey.
But
he answered your question. I mean,
it is so untrue. I mean, when you think back when people were, you know, growing their own food gardens and they had their own stuff and so on, people died of all kinds of diseases all the time. There are, you know, nature is the greatest enemy of human beings. It's the biggest single threat to humanity is not some whack job terrorist. It is viruses and bacteria. And you can read any biochemist's analysis of this. And it is that we are constantly on the edge of being overwhelmed by diseases, especially viruses that for which there is no pharmaceutical, and we're all dead. And so, you know, the whole idea is, for example, don't irradiate food. Well, the Japanese irradiate food. It has an enormous shelf life. There is no radiation in the food, and we have had all kinds of terrible outbreaks of, you know, intestinal diseases and so on, because we're so afraid to bring any of those new technologies on because they sound bad. But in fact, they are relatively benign, and they are helpful to human beings. Why do you think we're living so long, Arnie?
People used to die
when they were 35 years old. Now we're living until we're 80 years old.
Why
it is, Arnie? Let me tell you why we're living this long. I have it right here in my hand in the form of a beverage that has cobalamin in it. That's why we're living so long.
All right, time out. We've got two really good calls I want to try to get to, and then you two can yell at each other.
We can go home, yeah.
All right, let's go to Chris in Amana. Chris, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well. Your comment?
Yeah, well, I was going to comment on the fear. By the way, this conversation is just absolutely great. It's pretty much an absolute picture of the United States as a whole.
And I love you.
We try to recreate reality here.
Yeah, you're doing a pretty good job. That's one thing about this country. Everybody's got an opinion, point of view, and who to say who's right and wrong. But the first thing I want to point the blame at our incompetent government, mm-hmm. who basically do just enough so they can get voted in the next year, but they don't want to do anything serious. We really just need to get some people up there, you know, at some options to vote for that are worth voting for, and people who go up there and take a risk, vote for something, and, you know, and if they don't get voted in office, you know, oh, well, they obviously made a mistake. Maybe next time around they'll try something different. And they're overpaid.
As someone who's been an elected official, let me share two things with you. One, it was the most wonderful job I've ever had in my entire life. And I only earned, as a state rep in New Hampshire, $100 a year. But it was the most amazing thing. The other problem is that you begin to believe only you can do it. that only you can be there, that they need you, that the system will fall apart if you're not there. Your ego gets stroked even when you're only earning $100 a year. Every lobbyist, every constituent, everybody somehow treats you as if somehow you're better than them. And I think that that's problematic. So part of what we need is not only people who are willing to run the risk of losing in the next election, we probably need a combination of term limits and public financing, because people need to know that they are not indispensable.
Well, now, and
they're
Arnie,
very indispensible.
In New Hampshire, aren't there like 700 people in the state legislature?
It's incredible.
Right.
There's 400 of us. I mean, we're like the third largest body in, I think, the free world.
I mean, but a friend of mine got elected and he didn't even know it.
That's exactly right. But it doesn't mean that once you're there, it isn't a wonderful position and you learn a lot. But what's so sad is that we forget why we're there. We're not there to get reelected. We are there to do something, damn it, and they forget.
Let's go to another call. John from Indianola is on the line. John, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Thank you. I'm really interested in Arnie's last remarks.
Okay.
John?
Oops.
Oh, darn it. We lost
boy.
Him.
Well, I was going to tell Arnie real quickly that I, you can tell Bill Gardner, who is the famous Secretary of State of New Hampshire, that I'm planning to run for president in 2012.
$1,000 at all it takes. You know, you two can run and be on the BS.
You watch out, Arnie. I'm going to be all over New Hampshire.
John from Indianola, if you can call back, 866-780-9100. Sorry we lost you there. Wondering if both of you can comment maybe about the intensity issue, because if you go back not too far along, I mean, look at the kind of minority leader that Bob Michael was compared to minority leaders now, and I don't think even regardless of party, but the vitriol level is a lot higher now than it was then. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, look, I know what you're saying, and I think for the public, it's not a good thing. For small children, it's not a good thing. In reality, when they used to say the honorable senator from Mississippi, what they really meant was that moron that I'd like to go over there and challenge him to a duel and take him outside and slap him until he's bleeding. There was always a great sort of ritualistic pretense, and then in the back rooms of Congress, brutality broke out and it was out of the sight of the public, and maybe that's better that way. You know, Congress, even when they were at the most polite, they were passing legislation that prevented African Americans from voting, and they were passing all kinds of horrible legislation, even though they were doing it very politely. So I think, you know, it's the output at the other end, what it is we do, and whether it's successful, and whether we can overcome big obstacles and then return to some civility after people see that the end of the world isn't coming. That's what really is the mark of a successful, political system.
And, Jonathan, it is the economy, stupid. And the problem right now is not only do we see a huge unemployment number, but we have young people that are leaving college with enormous debt. Enormous debt. I went to St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. It was like $4,000 a year for tuition, books, and my living expenses. I mean, it was ridiculous. There was relatively little debt for me. And given what people are expected to make and the lack of jobs for people that are just leaving, we are living in very different times with very legitimate fears. Now the question is, how do we organize our lives? How do we organize the conversations so that we can then figure out how to make the next step? It is very different. Let's face it. It is different than 10 years ago and 20 years ago. Now, different doesn't mean bad, but it does mean adjustment. And we need leadership in Washington that helps us adjust, not just pander to fear.
Stefan, Andrew from Grinnell is on the line and would like to take exception to something you said. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to say that the implication that Stefan made, about preservatives in our food, extending our lifetime, I don't think that, at least that was the implication that I heard. I would like to take exception to that, and that I think that especially with the healthcare debate that we've had recently in our country, that we really need to take a step back and look at what we're putting into our bodies, and that we really need to be eating real food, kind of like what Arnie said. So,
yep. No, that's right.
I disagree vehemently.
The ingredient that I have in this beverage is actually the scientific name for vitamin B12, so don't worry about it too much. On the other hand, before we
I'm aware of that, but what I'm taking exception to is was your comment on irradiation, and then also kind of the implication that that you don't need to really worry about what's in your food.
We do need to worry about what's in our food. We do worry about what's in our food. You know, the FDA, the Department of Agriculture, are constantly on the hunt trying to improve inspection of meat and vegetables, trying to prevent E. coli, trying to go after, you know, what is causing norovirus outbreaks and so on. So we're constantly trying to fight both natural attacks against the quality of our food, as well as all of the processing that goes on, all of the plastics that are leaching into food in cans, and in almost anything that's plastic that is flexible apparently now is a very high risk to human health. On the other hand, we are living extraordinarily long lives, and if all that stuff is so bad, you know, it ought to be killing us earlier.
Well, Stefan, that's catching up with us. Can I? I would love, since this is Iowa.
It's catching up with us.
Arnie, can you hold that thought for just a second?
Hold
that for just a second. Thanks for that call, Andrew. A quick email. Carver from Ames writes in, while I really enjoy Stefan, I disagree with his point on us being on the edge of microbial holocaust from our food. There is a microbial holocaust coming. It will be from our labs and hospitals. There are people sometimes who die from microbial food contamination, but you are falling prey to the media hype that you're criticizing right now. So that's from Carver in Ames. And now I got to go to John from Indianola, because I think it might have been me who accidentally disconnected him earlier. John, thank you for calling back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to agree with Arnie. I'm serving the Iowa legislature in the 60s, and I'm 80 years of age. And what I've seen in the last few years is just an absolutely astronomical takeover by corporate money, by lobbyists. Yep. And until we have campaign financing, there's not going to be any changes. We might just as well realize that we're going to have to live with what we have unless we have adequate public financing of campaigns. When you see the Democratic leader, and I happen to be a Democrat, Democratic leader this last year gets $691,000 in a senatorial district, it's just unbelievable. And the same thing is true whether it be Democrat or Republican. The lobbyists are in control of our state houses and our national government.
Well, and he's 80 and I'm 56, and we're singing Kumbaya together. I mean, and we have experience, we have history, and we're seeing it getting worse and worse and not better and better. And once you see the Citizens United case come to fruition and all the money come pouring in as a result of this huge opening of corporate money, it's going to make a situation worse. The question is, do we appreciate the policy and the politics and the government that is a necessity for this country? And if we do, how do we literally take our government back? And that's something that could be said by a Tea Party protester. They want to take their country back too. But I think we have to figure out what it is we mean when we say that.
Well, let me comment on that, if I might.
Very briefly, John. We're almost out of time.
Okay. One of the things I'm seeing is a disconnect of families. People of age now are being shuttled off to nursing homes as quickly as possible. They're not living in the homes with the next generation to help give them some wisdom on the process of life. So consequently, we're not a caring nation anymore. You know, we're a give and a take and get rid of as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, come live with me, because what you need to know is my 90-year-old aunt is living upstairs. Why? Because I wanted to learn from her. She could have gone to a nursing home. It would have been very easy. We could write the check. But I said, no. The reason why she's a member of my family is that the operative word here is family. So I think those are the kinds of things we need to start talking about, because then we won't be worried about elder care if we can figure about how a family can exist together.
John, thank you. Right. Thank you very much for your call.
Yep. Move to New Hampshire. It's a great place.
Yeah.
Concord is great. Also, could I just quickly say that the caller from Ames ought to Google real quickly CTV and type in gonorrhea risks becoming a superbug. This is just from a couple of hours ago. They have now discovered that gonorrhea is on the edge of no longer being treatable, and that all over the world there is a mass fear that it is going to become an uncontrollable superbug. So, you know, maybe most viruses and bacteria and others are not such a threat, but, you know, I try to keep on top of this sort of stuff. So,
unfortunately, we have run out of time. Stefan Schmidt,
no,
Arnie Arneson, thank
gonorrhea,
you very much.
That's horrible.
Goodbye.
Well, this is a politics show. Is it really that much difference?
Ooh,
thank you very much.
Nasty.
Ouch. Did I say that? Sorry about that. That's all the time we have for Talk of Iowa today. Our program is produced by Dennis Reese. Assistance today from John Pemble, Julie Englander, Christoph May, and Christina Sarnelli. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa is available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments. You can email us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jonathan Aull. Thanks for joining us.